Welcome to the Dairy Farmers Digest, a podcast dedicated to all things dairy farming. Each episode, we will talk to industry leaders who share their insights and experiences into the dairy business. I'm your host, Keith Schweitzer, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the DFD. It's been a long time since I recorded, and I'm super excited to have Nick Thurler on from Get Corp. Well, from Get Corp, and you guys also farm down in Eastern Ontario as well, too, don't you, Nick?
Yes, that's right. We milk about 500 cows, my family.
Yeah, I toured your place. Oh, it's quite a while ago. I think we talked mostly with your son, but that would have been, probably 2018 or 2019. So I think 2018. Okay. But no, it's pretty, you guys are doing some unique things there. I don't know, are you guys still growing soybeans for silage rather than alfalfa?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. We're still doing that. Yep.
No, it's pretty interesting at the time. I've actually had a couple producers try it down this way, and it makes some really nice feed, to be honest. So, but to kind of get to it here, you're with Get Corp. And so you guys are from my understanding, a Danish company that's bringing in renewable natural gas digesters into North America.
Yeah, that's right. It's the company, it's called Green Island, that's partner with us, with Get Corp. Get Corp stands for Green Energy Trading. Yep. So yeah, they approached me about 3 years ago now to see about expanding into Canada, and that's where this got started.
Can you maybe explain to the listeners kind of what the idea is behind the RNG here, and maybe some more detail about what you guys have going on?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so like everybody knows, in Denmark, the digesters have been around for a long time, so they worked all the bug out of it. And anyways, they wanted to expand into Canada. And the model is only with waste from the farm, no off-site, off-farm materials. So the reason being, in Denmark, they built so many digesters, and when they got to the point that they had to pay for the off-site material instead of getting paid to put them in, so that's why they went this way, to be in control of what's going in the digester, so we didn't have to pay for it.
No, I was in Germany and Denmark in 2006, I believe, and it was like, they just seem like they're light years ahead of us when it came to some of the biogas and green energy stuff. And yeah, like at that time, the producers were getting paid for tipping fees for bringing in waste from outside products. So it's kind of, it was really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Back then, that's what they're, the first ones are probably 30 years old. So yeah, that's their model back then. But then there's 9,000 digesters in Germany and 2,800 in Denmark. So ran out of off-farm materials. So Get Corp was formed. So it's Shika Jin. She used to be a DFO. She's our partner, our CEO, Green Island, and myself. We created Get Corp. And the reason we created it is because when we got talking to Enbridge and TransCanada Pipeline and all those guys to sell the gas, they weren't interested in buying from different digesters. They want to buy it from one entity. So yep, that's why we created Get Corp. And so Get Corp, the model is, it's a 200-ton plant, 200 ton of manure per day. That made the most financial sense. And what that does, it's, I wasn't too keen about hauling manure back and forth from farms into a digester, but after you see what they do in Denmark, it's, you just have to be set up right. So any size farm could participate in it instead of just a few larger ones that might be able to afford a digester. So that's the idea behind it.
Yeah. So it's my understanding you need 1,200 or 1,500 cows worth of manure a day to kind of make it work?
Yeah, it's about 1150 now that mine is we're almost ready to ship gas, but my manure been going through it since last November, and my 500 cows does about 80, a little bit more than 40% of the plant. So
okay,
we need about 1150 cows plus young stock to fill it.
So as in, like, GetCorp is going out and getting the other farms in the area, or is that kind of left on the responsibility of the producer that has the digester on site?
So that's what GetCorp does. So yeah, we look after getting the manure, make sure the digesters are full at all time. We're looking after the gas contracts, maintaining the plants. There's a scale at each digester to measure the stuff coming in and going back out. The liquid is not as big of a deal, but we could convert. We need a bunch of organics like bedding packs and straw and stuff, so that's gonna get weighed in, and then either we buy it or the farmers gets it back in liquid form.
Okay, so like, are they using like chicken litter and stuff like that too, or is it got to be like ruminant manure?
Any egg product, so yeah, dairy, hog, poultry, beef, yeah, any manure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's and then like you said, they get the quote unquote digestate back.
So yeah, we pay it's $4 per ton, as long as it's 8 to 12% organic matter in it. So we pay $4 per ton. Then they get the digestate back, which got it's more available to the plant, so it should save them on fertilizers, chemical fertilizers to buy. And then it's set up that they get a dividend. Anybody participating get a dividend at the end of the year.
Okay, so is a main, I guess, revenue source just off the gas, or is there other avenues that you guys
gas are? And carbon credit. Carbon credit's a pretty big part of it.
Yeah, so the carbon credits, like, that's, I don't think that's anything that we're paying for here in Canada, is it? Or is there opportunities?
No, not yet. The government's looking at that stuff. But yeah, right now it's our pilot, which is four digesters, mine and three in Western Ontario. Those carbon credits going to be sold in California.
Okay, so that's really interesting. So is it like a, like the company reaches out to, say, some kind of processing or manufacturer would reach out to GetCorp and say, we want to buy your carbon credits at X amount of dollars to offset the carbon that we're producing here in California, for instance?
Yeah. And the interesting part about our credits, they're green because it's all on-farm waste. Like, we came up with a marketable crop like corn silage or anything like that, so it's all waste product. So that makes a D3 gas, which is a green gas, and green carbon credits. So they're very valuable.
Okay. And is that kind of the, like, I imagine you're a lot more up to date on some of the governmental affairs with these projects around green energy. So is there more states or provinces that are looking at coming online with this carbon credit or carbon trading or carbon offset purchasing?
Yeah, there is. So there's nothing federally yet, but BC has, they have some kinds of credit, and Quebec too.
Okay. I guess if you're taking a helicopter view of everything and just kind of like, is it something that's going to be more prevalent, I guess, going forward?
Yeah, I believe so.
So can we maybe get in and talk a little bit about the process? Because I know in the past, like, sand manure was a big thing for digesters, like they didn't want it, but it sounds like you guys have some sand separation systems that are going in and things like that.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of farms with bed cows with sand. So sand is a no-no to go through a digester. So we have a sand separator that's been built in Eastern Europe. It's a model that from Denmark, and We'll get them, so in the three pilot project in Western Ontario, they all gonna have a scent separator.
Yep.
So how that's gonna work, we're bringing the manure, we pick up the manure at the farm with the sand, separate it at the digester, and then the farmers are gonna get their manure back without the sand, and then every couple of weeks they'll get their sand back.
Oh, so you can reuse, they should be able to reuse the sand then.
Yeah. This scent separator is works quite well, actually. 600 cow farm in Denmark used to buy three dump truck load a week of sand, and now he buys three a year.
So that's pretty positive for the producers as well. Then, like, they get their sand back, and mm-hmm. I come from a sand farming background, so I know a lot of producers are kind of weary about putting years and years of sand back on their land, but it's not a, I guess the digester makes it a non-issue.
Yeah, that's right. And the sand that comes out of that separator is dry, and they only use one gallon of water per cow per day to clean the sand out. And the sand is dry, and they claim 10 days after separation, it's safe to go back in the barn.
Oh, because I know I got some producers with sand lanes, and they're talking leaving it sit for 6-8 months before they put it back in the stalls. So
yeah, that makes it nice, because then you don't have huge mountain of sands laying around to wait it to get dried and that kind of stuff.
So with you and your role with GetCorp, like, are the farmers the owners of the digester, or GetCorp owns it and they lease property from the producer?
So yeah, for a farm, there's three ways to be involved with it. So first of all, I'll start with the participant. So that means you sign a contract with GetCorp for your manure to that GetCorp is you let GetCorp come and pick up your manure and bring back the digestate. The second way to participate, it's being a host farm. So you agree to have a digester on your farm, and GetCorp will finance that digester. So you will get everything the participant gets, plus $5,000 a month for the lease of a couple of acres of land the digester sits on. And the third, it's the owner. So if you want to own the digester, we ask for 30% down. GetCorp's going to finance the rest. And it's a 12-year payback. So after 12 years, your digester is yours. It's yours from get-go if you put the 30% down. It's just GetCorp is financing it. And doesn't matter if you're a host or owner, you still have to go through GetCorp for the, like, GetCorp still looks after the sales of gas, guaranteeing, like, the owner doesn't have to worry about getting the manure or all that stuff. GetCorp,
yeah, or the contracts with Enbridge or the utilities, yeah, and all that other, yeah, stuff. Now, what about maintenance and things like that? Is that something that you guys look after as well?
Yeah,
I guess the operation of the plant.
Yes, so we'll have technicians on the ground. They're being trained as we speak, and we'll have technicians on the ground to look after those digesters. So the only thing we ask the farms that have a digester on their property is to, or they have to pump their own manure to it, which is rerouting some pipes, I guess, instead of going to their lagoons or pit, it goes to the digester and fill the organics once a day.
Okay. So they have really little responsibility with the day-to-day operations of these facilities.
Yeah. So we'll have the technician. We're thinking having somebody on site every other day for the day.
Okay.
But it's monitored by Green Island from Denmark. They're the one that's making the recipe and running the digester.
Yeah, because my understanding, it's kind of like a ration, like that you'd feed a cow.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't like spikes, and that's one reason why they're willing to put a guarantee on how much gas we're gonna get because they control what's going in.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Like they can just monitor it from halfway around the world, and they'll tell you before you ever notice anything that is kind of funky or wacky with this with it, right?
Yeah, so yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I know. I've seen the two or three sites here in Ontario that are going up. I haven't actually toured them, but you know, just driving by from afar, and it looks like it's quite a quite an undertaking to get one built.
Yeah, it is. Blossoming and the other thing, yeah, the one that's pretty unique about these digesters, the foundation is a 30% slope to it, so it's not a flat bottom. If there's a flat bottom, apparently every 4 or 5 years you have to empty them out to go and clean them inside, because you'll have a build up to 1, 2, or 3 feet of stuff on the bottom.
Yep.
So these got a 30% cone that they keep mixing, so keep everything suspended. So I saw a digester in Denmark that was 28 years old, and they never shut it down.
Really?
And that's a big thing, because they do make quite a bit of money. But and then if you got empty them out to clean them and then restart them, it's about you lose about four months of revenue every 4 or 5 years. So because it takes about 2-3 months to get the bugs back up.
Yep.
So this way, yeah. So we got a guaranteed of a yield, gas yield, and a 95% uptime.
Okay. So like if they do go down, like is there just like a candle or a burner that just burns the methane off while they're doing maintenance or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if you have to change a pump or if you have to shut it down for a day or a few hours or whatever, it doesn't ruin the content of it.
Yeah. What kind of yield, like how much gas are they, or methane, I guess, are they producing?
We have three numbers. We got a guaranteed of 200 cubic meters of gas per hour. We got an expected yield of 250 and a potential of 300 cubic meters per. So, yeah, I wish I would make it. Well, in liters, it's supposed to be about 60,000 liters a day of natural gas, renewable natural gas.
If it's going back into the pipeline, like would it be like 50% methane, and then you got to take like clean it up and scrub it and add your smells to it and whatnot?
So that happens right at the farm or right at the digester. The gas coming out of the top of the digester is 63% methane, and it's going to get cleaned to 99%. It needs to be 97 something to be injected in the pipeline. So we're going to clean it to 99%. And then it gets trucked to the, and that makes it more efficient that it's 99%. You don't haul stuff that's you can't put in the pipeline.
So like, is the idea that the producers are going to go directly into a pipeline, or is there like a station that the producers are going to have to deliver the gas to?
Yeah, it's called an injection site. The only one that they have east of Highway 400, it's in Kingston so far, so that's where mine's gonna go. In Western Ontario, there's a few more injection sites. So wherever the closest one is to the digesters, that's where I'll go.
So you essentially have to send it to like a compressor station.
Yeah, I guess the compressor is at the digester. It gets compressed into the trailer.
Okay.
And then the trailer, so we could put as much as possible in the trailer. And then, goes to the injection site. And then it takes a bit to unload the trailer because they have to reverse the process. Like they have to decant, they call it decant the gas at the injection site. They can't just dump it in one shot, otherwise I guess they'll freeze. So there's a bit of a process for downloading too.
So it's not liquid that you're transporting, then it's gas.
It's liquid gas.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So they go back in the pipeline and then they have to, unliquefy it.
Yeah, that's right.
Is there a lot of, I guess, interest in these units? Like I know you said you have three here in Western Ontario, like is there opportunity to keep expanding that right now? And I guess what's the scale up process behind it?
Yeah, so we're putting a process together for to raise the funds. We actually getting pretty close to get the funds for the next 30. So we got 30. We have a good idea where the next 30 plants are going to be.
Yep.
And there's lots of interest, from farms to participate in it too, like to supply the manure. Because it's for a participant is actually, it's an extra revenue. They might have to spend a bit of money at the farm if they don't have a pre-pit at the barn. We have to pick up the manure within 7 days of pretty fresh manure. So we pick it up at the barn and bring it back in their storage. So they technically won't have to pump manure anymore. We'll transfer it for them. And then, they get the benefit of the digestate and then they're part of the program.
So it shouldn't or can't go into like a lagoon at the farm. Like you have to build a separate receiving pit.
Yeah. We can't take the manure out of the lagoon to go through a digester. Cause it's you lose a bunch of gas once it gets past 4, 5, 6 days old. So the sooner we pick it up, the better.
Yeah. Cause it's just, I guess it'd be composting, I guess, in the pit. So you're going to lose your efficacy of that manure.
Yeah.
Is there anything, like, I guess this is more back to a cow side thing. Like, is there anything like restrictions on like what producers can feed their animals or anything like that, that, you know, because what we put in is going to affect the manure coming out. Like, do you see a difference in, or do they have experience, I guess, in Denmark with how the producers are feeding their cows versus with a going through a digester versus the manure not going to a digester?
Yeah, so we kind of, that's one thing maybe we taught the Danish guys a little bit about feeding cows, because at first they told me, once you got a digester, you feed your cows for the digester, not for milk. And they said, well, that ain't going to happen in Canada because we get well paid for our milk. So
yeah,
the biggest one is Rumensin. Rumensin, apparently, if you feed Rumensin through the whole herd, your the methane production in the manure is 16% less. So that's the only change I made here was we just feed the Rumensin to the pre-fresh and fresh, and actually we weren't feeding through the whole herd at the time, but sometimes we did. But so that's the biggest one, really. Otherwise, there's not too much. It's the amount. We just we might have to put a bit more manure through it to get the yield. If every farm's gonna get their manure tested before we pick it up the first time, see where it's at, and that'll be the benchmark. And then we'll test it every 3 months or so. Yeah, and we asked the farmer to let us know if he makes some big changes or something. So, and then we could test it and see where it's at.
And from a management side of things, like, is it a no-no then to use, say, like copper sulfate for foot baths and things like that? Because I know there's copper sulfate as a great antibacterial. So if you're trying to produce bugs that are creating methane, like, is it counterproductive?
Yeah, it is if there's a big volume, but I was told, I use copper sulfate, and I gave them the amount I was using, and it's so small of a percentage in the whole scheme of thing that, and if a digester is start up with the copper sulfate in it, then they could adjust that. If it doesn't like spikes, feeding cows, long as it's used to something and there's no spikes, then it's they could make it work.
I'm just thinking here, like, this is maybe a little bit different than the Danish model. Like, they don't want any like off-farm materials. Like, is that something that could change for Canada, or they're just going to try and stick to the manure?
No, that could change if let's say the D3 gas or the green carbon credit doesn't pay anymore, then yeah, you could spike them up with other stuff. They don't have no problem doing that. But yeah, if there's too many digesters being boiled, that's what they're afraid of. That am I run out? Like the off farm material runs out after a while, and then you're back to square one.
Yeah, I was talking to, a producer here. This week's been CDX here in Western Ontario. And I was talking to a producer that has a biodigester, and they create electricity out of it. And he said that there's certain products that have kind of dried up because the companies that are supplying the products find out that they can get paid for carbon credits in other places. So then they're just, they're going to divert their waste there instead because they're going to get better, I guess, a better value for that product.
Yeah, that's exactly what the Danish are were afraid of.
Yeah, so if you start without it, then I guess you don't have to rely on it going forward. So, because I know the electric generator here, like the biogas generators, they have a kind of a association or a group that they all kind of work together to get them to run them and source products and things like that. So it's kind of, it's just a little bit interesting going from electricity to RNG. So,
Yeah, like in Denmark, they do both, but a lot of it, it's RNG. They greened up 50% of their pipeline in Denmark is RNG.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
And their goal is to get 100% by 2033. They're hoping that 100% of the pipeline be RNG.
Is that their main kind of, I guess, energy source there when it comes to heating and electrical generation and all that stuff?
The war in Ukraine really pushed them to try to get 100% of their pipeline with RNG sooner than they had expected.
Is there anything else that you want to highlight with what you guys are doing there?
Said it all. You ask all the right questions. So.
I'm just spitballing here. So it's coming out of like real curiosity for it, because like I see everybody's got this idea of net zero carbon, and then we've got cows that produce manure that we can make RNG off of. It just seems, and the farmers are going to get a kind of diversify their business portfolio and get some revenue off it. So it seems like there's a good opportunity to get into a project like this, right? And not just from a business standpoint, but from kind of like a social credit score standpoint as well. Because there's lots of rhetoric out there about cows and methane and things like that. So if you can say, well, actually we're harvesting the methane and we're going to use it as a viable energy source, like I think it's a really good optics for the ruminant industries.
And it if it fits in line with the Dairy Farmers of Canada goal to get to net zero by 2050, and we check a lot of boxes with the government when we talk to them about what we're doing. And you asked me about highlighting one thing for any farms that are involved with Get Co-op, like them, when you're going through our digesters, the revenue they get from the manure, it works out to 2 cents a hectoliter on their milk price. So it's like they get a $2, 2 cents increase for their milk. So it's an extra revenue for the farm.
Yeah. I just want to shift gears a little bit and talk about the digestate side of things and the fertilizer value of it, because I know there's been some talk about that as well. Like it's a better source of kind of your macronutrients and say conventional manure. Can you maybe touch on that stuff a bit?
Maybe not quite as familiar with what it's all going to do, but it's they claim it's 35% more available to the plant, especially if you put it on a live crop. So it would work really good for like put it on a hay ground or cover crop, like you put a cover crop in the fall and then spread it on that. Like in Europe, they're not allowed to spread manure in the fall anymore. It's all, and not spread the way we spread neither. It's got to be injected or with dribble hoses. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's where to get the full benefit of this digestate. When it comes back, it's maybe that's where it should go, like on a live crop or in the spring, like just before planting, or to get the most benefit of it.
Goes back to like the, I guess, the N, P, and K availability. Like it's very available to the plant compared to manure. It's already, I guess, the digester's done the whole breaking apart of the molecule portion of it. So it's.
Yeah. That's well, it's because it's heated at 50 degrees. So it, yeah, breaks down everything. And the other thing it does, it kills all the weeds. So in Denmark, they actually, if they have too much manure off those digesters, they sell it as organic manure.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because I heard, like I had heard that it can be a little bit harder on your organic matter levels in soil. Like if you're putting it on for years and years and years and say a smaller land base, it can have some negative effects, I guess, with organic matter, because you're probably not getting, like with dairy manure, there's still quite a bit of organic matter in it compared to say hog manure and things like that.
So yeah, the organic matter goes down about half. If you got 8% going in, you got about 4% coming out apparently.
Okay. That's probably another reason why it's better to put onto a live crop, because it just gets used up right away, right?
It gets, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And so the producers too, I guess, on the manure or the digestate side of things, so they would just put the digestate back into whatever manure storage they have currently on farm, and then just spring or summer spread.
Yeah, that's right.
I think that's all the questions I had, Nick. Like I really, I didn't have a lot of information kind of going into it. Like I know I mentioned before we started, I heard you speak down here in Western Ontario back before Christmas about it. And it really just kind of, it made me very interested in it, because it's, I think these things are going to be the future for not only like nutrient management, but for kind of social licensing as well. Right. Like it.
Yeah. Like I said earlier, it takes a lot of boxes for the government. So when you see what's going on in the world, like the, like in Europe, it's pretty bad what they're trying to do. And so here we kind of maybe be ahead of that curve before. We're very fortunate to be in this country too. We've got so much land base and stuff, but we might as well be proactive than have the government tell us what to do later.
Yeah, it's always a little, I'm a big fan of being proactive rather than reactive.
Yeah.
So it just seems like it's an easier transition, and I guess there's a little bit more freedom with what you can do if you're kind of on the outside or the early stages of it, right? So rather than getting it mandated and saying you have to do this by certain times. So And how did you get involved? Like, is this something that you kind of sought out, like you were looking at doing a project like this? Or
I was always thinking of doing the digester or looking at this stuff. But I was approached by Green Island. I'm not sure how they found me, but anyways, they never did tell me that. But I know they went on the DFO website. I was the vice chair of DFO at the time, and a larger farm. But anyways, they connected with me and asked me if I could deliver the Canadian manure to them. So then I said, well, we need to. And they said a couple of good things. They said, we want to look at it, and if we need a grant or a subsidy, we're not interested. It's got to work with the marketplace. And they want it to be, to be available to as many farms as possible. So then I said, well, we need to, I need to see the numbers. So let's do a model on my farm and see what it looks like. And we'll go from there. And yeah, that's how it got started. And it kind of snowballed from that. I never expected to be at this stage, but I got to give a lot of credit to my CEO, Shika Jin. She's without her, we wouldn't be where we are today, but she loves the dairy industry, and she sees the future. She probably had a good teacher with Peter Gold. Everybody knows Peter Gold.
Yeah.
Peter Gold is probably the most forward thinking guy that I ever met about where the dairy industry should be, like down the road. And that's how Chica sees things too. And like make a different, like another income for dairy farmers. And at the same time, doing a good thing. That's how it got started. So,
yeah, I think we'll jump off there. I really appreciate you coming on and telling us your story about the Get Corp and the green energy initiatives that you're kind of pushing here in Ontario. And congratulations on all your success. And I'm sure we'll run into each other sometime around the industry here.
Okay, sounds good. Yep. It was my pleasure to do this, and hopefully it's all good.
Thanks, Nick.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for listening. This episode of the Dairy Farmers Digest is brought to you by the dairy team at Wallenstein Feed and Supply Limited. If you enjoyed the show, subscribe and follow us on your favorite podcast player, and please leave us a review. If you would like further information about today's topic, check out the show notes for further details and our contact information. I would also like to extend a special thanks to Christine Swinderwood, our producer, and our sound engineer, Daniel Noguera.